This is Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. Dialogue Conspiracy is a program which shares the political research of Mae Bressel. Her almost 10 years of work are based on the theory that government is moved as much or more by conspiracy than by any democratic process. I don't know whether I've lost track or whether the election pressure is getting to me. I think this is program number 84 in a never-ending series dealing with current events, history, politics, conspiracies, assassinations, politicians, assassins, public relations men, presidents, policemen, police informers, and other miscellaneous characters. Mae Bressel, the political research specialist who has devoted 10 years of her life to cutting out clippings and not only pasting them together, but tying them together, is here again in the studio, as she is every Saturday afternoon here on KLRB-FM. And Mae, the election is just hours away.
Around the corner.
Around the corner. What have you got to say for yourself on this weekend before the election?
Oh, I'm trying not to stay depressed. I just didn't want these elections to take place until we investigated what happened in 1963 in Dallas, or 1964, the election, 1968, the shooting of Robert Kennedy. I was hoping, all along with the massive amount of material that was available to prove the conspiracies existed, that the people would get interested in the information that the researchers were pointing to, the evidence was lining up of conspiracies, and break open this secret government that keeps affecting the electoral process and pretending that we have an election where the candidates are chosen for us. I had a fantasy that some way the truth would come out before 1972 and the elections would be stopped.
You don't think it's going to? You don't think it has?
No, there's only four more days now till elections, and the president is so tightly encased in a system, a propaganda system, a police network, a Justice Department system that controls the courts where any chance of investigating the truth comes out, that it looks like they had a pretty good plan when all these murders took over. A few weeks ago we were sounding very depressed.
You're sounding very depressed now.
No, I'm not going to be depressed.
I mean, it's sort of like you've written off the United States, and why go even vote?
Well,
is there any reason to vote, would you say?
Mr. Schmidt said this week that this will probably be the last election in the United States. I think 1960 was. Is there any reason to vote? Yes. If enough people had not dropped out, say the youth that was disenchanted in 1968, and the kids that turned away from the electoral process, or the adults that did, if they had voted for a man even as bad as Hubert Humphrey, who I can't stand, we would not have the selections on the Supreme Court that McGovern talks about now, or we wouldn't have a Warren Burger as a Chief Justice. I think the appointments would have been a little more human or humane. We would have had a bungling system with a lot of errors, but we have a piece of machinery that's so cold in the White House now and so immune to, they don't hear the needs of the people. They're not listening to what the people are saying. And I was reading a biography of Haldeman in the Washington Post, how fearful he is, how people detest him, that he has no semblance of a human personality. He orders people around and controls Richard Nixon, who goes in the White House, who goes out, and sends directives and memos that are very terse and has no qualities of humanness about him. The whole staff of Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and Ziegler, Klein, a group of people surround the president, and it's a dismal place. It's all business and not much fun, and they've devoted the last years, every few years, to getting Richard Nixon elected, and that's the only thing they care about. And the cabinet isn't called into the White House, and the State Department isn't used, and it's a pretty sad state of affairs in Washington.
Well, then, so why vote then?
Well, as a buffer to fascism, I feel very strongly that a vote for Humphrey or McGovern, more welfare rights, more consideration about people being bombed in napalm. Yeah, the Attorney General wouldn't be as blind to what happens in the courts today. I feel that it's a buffer against the total fascism. That's why I think people should vote.
Well, there have been numerous developments in the Watergate affair, and the Watergate affair, you believe, if I can speak for you in means of summary, you believe is just a part of a greater plan than simply a tactical maneuver to gain information through eavesdropping. And would you say that goes back to the Lewis Tackwood allegations?
Yes, I think that,
and
right.
Maybe you should explain briefly what the Tackwood allegations are for those who are new.
For those who are new and for those who've heard the show before, I'll go into the Lewis Tackwood allegations. And I think they're the most important allegations made in the United States, and the only thing that could save this democracy, or one of the few things that the media hasn't picked up yet that I've written about in The Realist. And I'm going to talk about what Lewis Tackwood said and who he is again. I've done on almost every show recently, because every week that we break and do our show here, Phil, and the 7 days pass and we get back together again on the air, more of what Tackwood said is being proven and being uncovered in Washington without giving him credit or linking it yet.
Okay, like what?
Well, we'll go into what his allegations were, and I'll go into the news this week and how it relates to the Tackwood. Lewis Tackwood is a police informer, a provocateur that worked for the L.A. Police Department for 9 years, who quit.
How old is he?
Oh, Tackwood's about 29.
Okay. He was so he started when he was in his early 20s?
Early 20s, and he is
if you're to believe
Louis
him.
Armstrong is his godfather. He lived in New Orleans. He was very close to next door. Louis Armstrong was named after him. And he came out to L.A. and he worked as a police informer and provocateur and exposed the criminal conspiracy section of the L.A. Police Department as planning conspiracies and not finding them. And the intelligence department of the Los Angeles Police Department, he claimed, is the police state branch. They call themselves the public relations, and it is the group that was to overthrow America, that's linked to the Attorney General in California, Evelyn Younger, to Houston, to Washington. And he exposed the police department in September 1971 because he was to hire radicals for the convention in San Diego and promote violence at the conventions and create a situation whereby martial law would go into effect and the radicals would be rounded up. And while we were in the state of martial law, they would get Nixon and supposedly assassinate him. The purpose, he said, of the Squad 19, that was the name of the operation, was total police state. And it was tied in, as I say, from California to Houston to Washington, and concerned the FBI. The contact man that he was to call in Washington was Mr. White. We've gone into this before. The big top boss of the group was Mr. Martin. At the time of the arrest at the Watergate Hotel, Mr. Hunt, Howard Hunt, had the code name White. And James McCord registered at the police department as Mr. Martin from New York City. $10 million was set aside for the overthrow of the police state in this government. And the Tackwood plan was to, they were hired in August and September of 71 to start rolling on Squad 19. But the convention was moved, and this is very important, from San Diego to Miami in March, so that all the new team that were arrested, the scrambling of money, the secret money, and we'll go into that in a minute, the new team had to move their operations with a shortage of time because the convention was moved, where everything was set up before the April 7th date, where they had to disclose the money they received. They had to, in 1 month, move their whole operation. It'd be like a military operation planning something in Vietnam and having all to be in Laos instead 1 month later without anyone knowing how they got there or who funded it.
So you're saying that the movement of money, what has been alleged and has practically been admitted by the Republicans, the movement from Texas to Mexico to Florida or wherever that went, out of the country, back in the country, and from one account to another, you're saying that that was necessitated by the move from San Diego to Miami Beach.
Yes, this is what I think happened. Because when you take a whole bunch of people like Bernard Barker, who was arrested, or Martinez and Frank Sturgis, and they have reservations for men, students to come into Miami at the time of the Republican conventions, That takes money to bring them in and make the reservations and pay the provocateurs. Well, this week in the news, there was an article November the 2nd, 1972, in the San Jose Mercury. A gentleman, an attorney down in Santa Ana by the name of Byron Beam, was approached by Donald Segretti. Segretti, for those who haven't heard the shows before or don't know that name, they should know by now, is a man from Army Intelligence and the Judge Advocate's Office who worked with the President's Secretary, Dwight Chapin, had direct contact with Chapin on setting up an espionage network across the country, and he worked with Howard Hunt. Segretti worked with Howard Hunt, the same man whose Tackwood had his name, and Segretti said that Hunt approached him in Miami to hire radicals, which, see, it was moved over the Miami section, but Tackwood was approached on the West Coast if it was going to be in San Diego. And Segretti moved with this team in the fall of 71, the same time that Tackwood was hired. Well, it seems that Segretti had come to this particular attorney in Santa Ana and asked him to get him long-haired radicals to bring to the GOP convention. And you see, Tackwood was not believed by anybody when he had his news conference in L.A. because, number one, he'd been arrested on charges 9 years earlier, and number two, he was black and a police informer, and they took the word of Chief of Police Davis that he wasn't credible. They didn't check any allegations out. So they didn't want to believe Tackwood, but not wanting to believe him doesn't mean he wasn't right. I believe what he said because it fit in with my research. But here's an attorney in Santa Ana who was also approached by Segretti to hire specifically long-haired radicals for the convention.
Well, other attorneys around California have also stepped forward recently, have they not?
Yes.
And said that they were approached by Segretti for basically the same reasons?
That's right. So that one of the allegations that Tackwood made has been confirmed by Segretti and by this attorney and other persons that were hired to get provocateurs. Now, the second thing that was in the news this week was that Common Cause had a suit against the Election Finance Committee of Richard Nixon to disclose the people who funded Richard Nixon up to the date of the 7th of April.
Now, Common Cause wants to know all of them, all $10 million worth.
$10 million, and it now runs up to possibly, they seem to have spent $20 million, so it wasn't 10 in that interim. But you see, Tackwood had said there was a secret fund set up for $10 million. So G. Gordon Liddy, the attorney for in the White House, who then moved to the committee to reelect Richard Nixon, was one of the fundraisers and a lawyer for the Nixon committee, set the date of April 7th that Richard Nixon would disclose where he gets his money from.
Now, do you contend that April 7th date was predicated on the convention being in San Diego?
No, this is what happened. I think people were getting suspicious about Richard Nixon's funding ever since he's been in office, from his original $18,000 that he had to count to up to the present. So that they said, okay, the Democrats are going to have to say what they have this year, and the Republicans are going to say what they have. So they said this arbitrary date, we'll tell you what we have after April the 7th, which doesn't make sense. But when this is where the finance problem came in. When the convention was moved in March from San Diego to Miami, they had to raise the $20 million in the 2 months, just March and April, because the cutoff date was April. You see, all the money that Bernard Barker was caught with, a lot of it, $114,000, and that $25,000 that Andreas had, the man from Minneapolis, was dated after April the 7th. We wouldn't know about this money if the men hadn't been arrested at the Watergate, but you see, there was this mad scramble of money by Maurice Stans before the April 7th cutoff, because they wanted to keep the donor, if it is espionage money, and it goes back to the article I wrote for The Realist, which people on the local community can get in the Thunderbird or up at the bookstore in Santa Cruz, I refer to Nixon as the clandestine agent, and I refer to the Watergate as a CIA operation. Well, you have to account for the money after April the 7th, so all the funds that were going into this espionage activity had to be tucked away before April the 7th. And what wasn't tucked away and spilled over, which was consecutive CIA dollars, $100 bills of consecutive order, was traced to this washing CIA type of the way you handle money. So that what they got caught with was they had a deadline of the date to disclose their money, you see. But then they had to move the convention in that amount of time, in 6 weeks, and fund all the new agents. So Bernard Barker, see, he may not have been used if the convention was in San Diego. The man in San Diego may have already been paid and has his money in the bank ready for whatever he's going to do, but he can't come forward. So this is why they've spent $20 million and they can only account for 10. There may be $10 million in California that was going to create the excuse for martial law. But when you have 6 weeks to move it to Miami to get the provocations you need to prove that McGovern's people are wild radicals, they had to shift all the money and all the people so that the context of Segretti going back and forth across the country and Bernard Barker with Hunt and all the money, I can see all the mobility because they had to set themselves up before they disclosed how much they spent.
Just as a sidelight, not to throw you off the track too much, this $10 million figure has been bandied about for quite some time. And I'm not too sure what the source of that $10 million figure is besides the reference by Tackwood that there's a $10 million fund established for the hiring of radicals and things like that. Did the Republican organization ever say that they had $10 million up to that point?
Yeah, see, what happened was Mullen Associates, which is a public relations firm, set up all these dummy fronts for financing Richard Nixon's campaign because corporations aren't supposed to give and certain groups are broken down, like the Milk Fund gave through 50 organization fronts and each one opened a separate bank account of $2,500. See, and they broke it and they never used the banking for anything other than one check in each account. And they set up these dummy front organizations so that when it came time to announce, they themselves said, we have $10 million and we won't tell you where it came from. And it came from all, remember once on a show way back where we read off the names of all the dummy front organizations?
Oh, that's amazing.
It was just unreal that they could think of so many. And they were saying,
Kindergartners for Nixon.
It wasn't tax.
Dairy cows for Nixon.
That's right. Well, it says the TV for Nixon and Agnew and Nixon for TV.
Words switched around. The Finance Committee for the reelection of the president. The California Finance Committee for the reelection of the president.
Well, see. Oh,
here's various names used.
Here's the article from The Realist where I have the funding. It was the Robert Bennett, who worked in Mullen's public relations firm, and they admitted that they set up dummy front organizations that raised $10 million. Now, they didn't refer to Tackwood's article on their own. They're saying that they had $10 million in, there were 75 to 90 different organizations and different names, you see. So that the scramble for money is very important, and in the Common Cause suit, they were to John Gardner and the organization was asking to disclose the funding of Richard Nixon, who was giving money. So they made a deal out of court this week on November the 2nd that they would give the names of all the people who donated to Nixon before March, but they wouldn't tell who gave it from March to April. So John Gardner made a deal, and I called a congressman today in Washington to say, you call Common Cause, this particular man's aide, investigator for him, knows my work and knows the research. And I said, you get to Common Cause and get to Washington when Congress gets back and say, you either want to know all the money or nothing. See, they said, okay, if we'll tell you how much money the President's committee got up till March, and therefore they made this deal. Maurice Stans, who's the finance head of the financing of the Richard Nixon campaign, who was a former Secretary of Commerce, would not have to testify or appear, and by giving all their records up to March, there will be no disclosure for congressional committees or other investigators. Then it'll all be all locked up. So the General Accounting Office is getting all the money up till March, and the point of it is that it's the money it's from March to April that is necessary to know, because that's when the secret government had to move from San Diego to Miami. See how subtle that is?
So people might want to write Common Cause and John Gardner and ask him why he made the deal.
The San Francisco...
Would you say that?
Well, I think it would help to write to, say, Patman or Proxmire or somebody who's showing an interest, or write to Common Cause, John Gardner, and in Washington, D.C., because the whole point is anything up till March the 7th would be valuable to know. But even the San Francisco Chronicle of November the 2nd had an article, a title of the article called The Gap. And it said the gap between March 9th, 1972 and April 7th is significant. Mid-March to April 6th has been believed to be the heaviest time of the controversial contributions. See,
even the Chronicle recognizes that.
The Chronicle doesn't even know about Lewis Tackwood. And they recognize that the critical contributions came from March 9th to April 7th. They said the experts on campaign spending estimate that $20 million was spent in that time. Now, you see, if 10 is sitting out there with hot money that's marked that could be linked out in San Diego, or, you know, with espionage people, they had to have another $10 million moved to Miami. So
maybe people would like to write to Common Cause. I'm curious as to what results people are having with their letters. I know a lot of people are writing to various senators.
Are they writing?
I've received some indications that they are. I've also received some indications that they're getting form letters back, and they're getting indirect, if not oblique, answers to their questions, if any answers at all.
I
haven't heard of anybody really being satisfied with an answer to a letter that they've written to an agency or an individual.
Well, the response I get, I don't know of anyone out there or around here is really moving, you know, their head in the direction of what the Watergate is, but I know that the news media and somebody out there, the reporters, are into it because I brought into the studio for you to see, Phil, since I was here last week, about 60 articles. It's too bad it isn't television to see a three-hole notebook filled with about 60 important articles in a one-week time period since we met last week.
And I can attest to the fact that the radio broadcast wires, we have United Press International teletype here, written specifically for radio, has been equally full of
Watergate
and related incidents.
Oh, that's good. We see Walter Cronkite did 15 minutes this week on the funding of the Watergate, and last week he did 15 minutes on the Watergate. So somebody
that is extremely, I think, significant.
Bearing
in mind the fact that 15 minutes of network time is extremely expensive, and network news rarely takes more than 5 minutes on any story.
15 minutes on just the funding. You see, we're talking each week or trying to express, you know, what is happening when you refer to the Watergate. The name of this show used to be Dialogue Assassination, and then we made it broader, Dialogue Conspiracy, and now we should just call it Dialogue Watergate, because I thought of that this week, because everything that I've been saying about the murder of John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King can be seen in the manipulation of the Watergate case, the way the agents work, the way they're protected, the way the FBI doesn't investigate the case.
So you call it sort of a microcosm.
It is, and everything is coming to a head if people can't see this right in front of them as it unfolds. It would be difficult to understand how the other assassinations were covered up for what they were, which was a conspiracy, because the whole espionage thing, the Watergate is referred to as the espionage thing.
I see there you've got an article from our wire service, UPI.
Yes.
Nixon asked to answer spy charges. Yeah. I didn't
see
that.
Now, this came over the UPI.
Senator Sam Ervin called on President Nixon this past Wednesday to answer personally charges of scandal, sabotage, and spying by his administration. He said the allegations were undermining Americans' faith in their political system. Ervin is chairman of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on Constitutional Rights, wrote Nixon from his home in Morgantown, North Carolina, that nothing could be more serious than the erosion of faith in the electoral process.
Well, you know, this is what Dialogue Conspiracy is about, my research, is to restore the electoral process, and now it's becoming quite evident that the Democratic Party has been sabotaged for a long, long time. And maybe people who are listening would write to Senator Ervin and say, will you go into the Wallace shooting of the Robert Kennedy while you're on the espionage, because there's indication the electoral process is sabotaged along all the lines that we're reading in the paper. It may lead right to these political assassinations, which it will. Did you see the article? Now, this wasn't an APUP, but it's by Michael Harris on the sabotage by Richard Nixon in 1962 when he was running for governor of the state of California, and there was a lawsuit on this particular case.
Amazing what the Watergate has done. People digging places.
They're really digging, and we'll be going.
I have not heard of this.
You have not heard of that?
Where was this article taken from?
Well, that article's taken from the San Francisco Chronicle, and the New York Times had a long article, and in essence, this is what it says, that a former Democratic state chairman, Roger Kent, charged that Mr. Haldeman, who's been named in the Watergate suit now, who's the top man in the White House with Richard Nixon, and Mr. Herb Klein, who's the head of communications with Richard Nixon, set up a pattern of sabotaging the Democratic Party when Richard Nixon ran for governor in 1962. And they have a sworn deposition in the court.
Signed by Haldeman?
Signed by Haldeman, Nixon's chief of staff, that authorized the payment of $70,000.
Now listen to this reason.
Read it. Okay.
No, I just wanted to draw attention to the reason. I can't believe this. Having read this for the first time now, it's a little hard to believe.
Read the whole article, then we'll discuss it.
Well, you've already mentioned that. I'll start at the beginning again.
Okay.
And if you've heard it before, just Wait till I get something new. Former Democratic State Chairman Roger Kent charged that two of President Nixon's current White House aides set a pattern for sabotaging the Democratic Party during Mr. Nixon's unsuccessful campaign for governor in 1962. As evidence, Kent produced a sworn deposition signed by H.R. Haldeman, the president's chief of staff. Now, in his deposition, Haldeman said he had authorized payment of $70,000 to the late Joe Robinson, San Francisco petition circulator, for sending out postcards from a Committee for the Preservation of the Democratic Party in California seeking to discredit Governor Edmund G. Brown. Haldeman's statement said the group who joined him in approving the Republican-financed mailing included Herb Klein, now White House Communications Director, Herbert Kalmbach, now the president's personal lawyer, Maurice Stans, former Secretary of Commerce and Chairman of the President's Campaign Finance Committee, and Murray Chotiner, a sometime Nixon political advisor. The deposition came as part of a lawsuit that ended in 1964 when Superior Court Judge Byron Arnold issued a ruling in which he said, Mr. Nixon and Mr. Haldeman approved the plan and agreed that the Nixon Campaign Committee would finance the project. The judge ordered the committee to cease any further activities and to turn over the $368 left in its treasury to the Democratic State Central Committee. Haldeman was questioned in 1963 in Los Angeles by Anthony Gerald J. O'Gara, now a San Francisco municipal court judge. Is that O'Gara or O'Hara?
O'Gara, I think.
Haldeman, I had conversations with a number of campaign people at the time we were making the decision to go into this. O'Gara, who were those people? Haldeman, well, I don't know that I can cover them because, again, it was not my practice to consult with a lot of people on things of this sort. I would say originally it would have been Herb Klein. In response to questions by O'Gara, Haldeman identified his initials HRH on two documents authorizing payments of $35,000 each from the Nixon campaign to pay the cost of the mailing. In the light of the official findings of Judge Arnold in 1964, Kent asked, do you believe that candidate Nixon and Haldeman are innocent of complicity in the Watergate bugging and other espionage and sabotage in 72? Let's go through that again. In the light of official findings of Judge Arnold in 1964, former Democratic State Chairman Roger Kent says, in the light of that, do you believe that candidate Nixon and Haldeman are innocent of complicity in the Watergate bugging and other espionage and sabotage in this year, 1972? The White House issued a statement last week denying that Haldeman had any connection with a secret fund that Democrats say financed political sabotage and espionage in this year's campaign. I had never heard that there had been a prior admission by anyone, by those people.
You know what
they
did?
They were involved.
You know, they had a fake poll, too. You know how the polls are pushing Nixon down that same campaign? They were charged in court for conducting a phony poll on Brown to defeat him, and that was brought up in the Washington Post, a longer article on this thing.
Well, of course, having admitted doing something once does not necessarily mean that you have done it again, but it does make you wonder.
Well,
it certainly does raise a lot of questions.
It raises a lot of questions. The Washington Post had a long article on Haldeman, a biography or description of him, and it said he's the kind of a person that if you went up to him and said you have ketchup on your shirt, or, you know, that you spilled ketchup on your shirt, he'd look at the shirt and say, I don't have one on. That he hedges and denies everything, accepts no responsibility, and you can't pin him down to anything. But
well, they've been saying that Haldeman is a USC graduate. He also attended UCLA. I don't know whether that means anything. But
well, you know, the fact that he graduated.
Well, I'm a UC, you know.
But in that article of sabotage, Herb Klein, Herbert Kalmbach,
look at those
the
names.
President's
They're all
lawyer.
People that are involved either in the
Maurice Stans.
They're either involved in the cabinet or in the White House.
Well, Kalmbach is the lawyer for Nixon now. This was 1962. That
but all those names, with the exception of Herb Klein, have been mentioned in relation to the Watergate affair.
Oh, Herb Klein
Herb
has been.
Herb Klein is you know, director of what, communications?
Oh,
for the
he's
president.
Been mentioned indirectly in the communications thing. Actually, they're all ganging up against Klein. It's sort of an White House struggle going on right now of them, Haldeman against Klein, and he was supposed to be watching Klein. That
let's,
was